Welcome to Bare Roots,
the podcast that unearths the truth.
Allegedly.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina.
And I'm Shannon.
Hello. Welcome back to Bare Roots podcast. Today's episode is kind of on the spookier side. So we're bringing a little spooky in the summer. And we're talking about the infamous Jack the Ripper, and we're gonna break down the suspects because I think we all know the story-ish, but do we know the suspects? Do we know, like, what solution was found? Was there ever a solution? Like, what clues were the police working with? And we're gonna literally go through the whole nine yards. But Shannon, before we do, how are you feeling today?
Today I'm feeling good. I also, while researching, was thinking like, ooh, this probably should have been a spooky season episode. But you know. I do love an impromptu spooky ep every now and then. Just to, you know, like, one a season is good. It's fine.
Once a quarter. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You need to throw it in there for good measure.
Exactly. And for our listeners, I actually studied abroad in London, so I'm very familiar with kind of the area that they're talking about. I had, my dorm room was in East London, so I kind of have like an idea, and I even took a walking tour, so I learned.
Specifically a Jack the Ripper walking tour?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I did see some of those pop up.
Yeah, it was less spooky and more historical, but of course it's like a little spooky.
Yeah. Was it at night?
Yeah, it was at night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay,
that is. There was just so many of us, so I'm like, I wonder how I kept it cool, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that one wasn't as scary for me, but yeah, it was good.
And it's such like a distant past that it feels like a little less scary.
I think so. Yeah, exactly. So it's a thing. If you guys want to go on a tour at night, they're available.
They're available. So we're going to hop right into it. So we're getting into our magic school bus and going back to 1888.
That's right.
East London. I'm picturing grunge, you know, like we are
totally
grunge grossness.
Exactly.
This is in the area that was kind of known for violence and crime, and it was very poor. But in 1888, suddenly there was an increase in murders, and people put it together that they were, you know, very similar and therefore by the same person. And Jack the Ripper was the first internationally known serial killer, which is, you know, important to note. He took the lives of 5 women, but there could be up to 11. There's like kind of 5 confirmed, and then 6 more that were around the same time, but they just weren't murdered in the same way. So it's a little unclear. The 5 confirmed murders took place within a mile of each other, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned, this is the area of East London, specifically Whitechapel area. And it was known for having many skilled Jewish and Russian immigrants. There was an influx of immigrants in this area. And it was known for squalor and crime. And interestingly enough, prostitution was only a crime if it caused a public disturbance. So there were thousands of brothels around at the time. All of the murders were, all the 5 were prostitutes. And actually, murders of prostitutes, it's not like that was uncommon. That happened all the time, and literally nobody gave a crap. They were not reported or discussed, but the reason why we know of Jack the Ripper murders was because they were particularly gruesome, and the news picked it up and kind of ran with it. At the time, literacy was increasing, and it was published in the newspaper. People became very interested in the story, obviously, and people in the area were terrified.
Yep.
Eventually, the public was so upset that, or so upset at the failed attempts to identify the killer, that the police commissioner and home secretary resigned. Since 1888, more than 100 suspects have been named, but no killer has been found.
So crazy, especially given like the small area that it did happen in the short amount of time. You would think there'd be some sort of lead or lockdown, you know, of the suspect.
But nothing. Exactly. So we're going to go into the timeline. We're just going to like run it down for you. And obviously, mm-hmm. there are a lot of details on this case. People actually call themselves Ripperologists, people who yes. Study this case or these cases. So we're just going to do like our bulleted synopsis.
Yep.
Because there's just so much data in here.
Yes. Yep.
So the first murder was August 31st, 1888. The victim was Mary Ann Nichols. Her body was found in Bucks Row in Whitechapel, and it was discovered by a man named Charles Cross. So he and another man, Robert Paul, was with Charles when they found the body.
Mm-hmm.
She was found on her back. Her throat was severely slashed and she was disemboweled. They thought that she was only dead for about 30 minutes because her face was still kind of warm.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured the killer was still on the loose. One thing that immediately was brought up to the police was that prostitutes in the area spoke of a man nicknamed Leather Apron because he often wore one. And he had been threatening to rip them open if they didn't give him their money. So that's not great.
Yep.
So a lot of women were saying it was him, it was him. However, when the press got a hold of the story, they started emphasizing his Hebrew appearance because they described him. And it led to a lot of anti-Semitism in the area, more than there already was.
Mm-hmm.
But they finally identified the guy that they had been talking about, and he had really strong alibis and was cleared. So then we fast forward, like a week? And
yeah.
September 8th, Annie Chapman was found and discovered by a man named John Davis. Her throat was cut and the murderer took out her uterus. So very specific.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A doctor looked at it and he thought of the idea that the killer had like some sort of anatomical knowledge mm-hmm. by the way in which the womb was removed. So he was saying like, this isn't just the average Joe would be able to do this.
Right.
And the coroner, who went by the name of Wynn Baxter, he revealed that the sub-curator of the pathological museum for one of the London medical schools had approached him with information about a certain American doctor who had offered him £20 for each uterus he could provide him with.
Woo.
So people were wondering if this knowledge of a demand kind of like incited the killings.
Yeah. And that is a thing too. I think a lot of people don't know about or doctors paying for, I think even people who work at the graveyard, right? For like bodies so they could do their whole analysis on it and learn more about the anatomy of the body and whatnot. So it's not crazy.
It's not crazy. And it's just weird that why was that request sent out for that specific organ, you know? And then now women are being found without that organ. £20 seemed like too cheap for me. A single note. I'm just picturing like a single $20 bill. But I did do the calcs and that's £2,700 today, which is about $3,400. So I'm like, somebody in a tough spot. Okay, that could not. I mean, not justifying it,
right.
At all. But just like, okay, if you're desperate enough, it's not nothing.
Exactly.
Needless to say, those revelations about the paying for the uteruses, it caused a sensation. But the medical profession itself was quick to disprove those allegations, which I mean, kind of like, duh, they're gonna say that, but
right.
Like, no, nobody would ask for uteruses. What are you talking about? You know? So almost a month goes by and people are getting to feel a little bit more relaxed. You know, they're like, okay, maybe we've put that behind us. But on September 27th, the Central News Agency received a letter from the alleged killer saying basically good luck and he was out for our next one. And this is when he names himself Jack the Ripper and told them to use it.
Yeah, which is kind of like funny to me in a sense. Wow, he's a marketing genius. Like,
right.
He has a brand, you know, he has his name. He knows his core.
It's a catchy phrase. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they did decide, which I'm not entirely sure why, but they did decide to release that letter on October 1st. And that caused like a whole storm of copycat letters being sent into the mail and everything. And actually, even that letter turned out to be a hoax because it they found out it was written by a journalist, but the nickname stuck. So they just ran with that.
Yep.
So it makes a little bit more sense that like a journalist with that kind of marketing edge right. would come up with it.
Yep.
3 days later, on September 30th, Elizabeth Stride died. She was found with her throat cut, but her uterus wasn't removed. So that kind of threw people off.
Yep.
However, she was still bleeding when she was found. So there's a guy named Louis Diemschitz. He like was in his cart and he pulled around the corner and found her. So they think that interrupted the killer and he ran off before he could take out her uterus. But sadly enough, only 45 minutes after Elizabeth, a woman named Catherine Eddowes was found dead, and she had her throat slashed and her uterus removed and also her left kidney.
Yeah, like this was, I feel like this is not, I don't want to say the turning point, but like a huge night in terms of clearly Jack the Ripper doing the two yeah. murders, but mm-hmm. also just taking seriously, oh wow, like there really is somebody out there.
Yeah, and he's active.
Yeah.
In order to do those crimes so closely together, he would have had to walk towards the first body. The police actually found a piece of Catherine's clothing outside an apartment building. There was chalk written on the wall saying, "The Jewess are the men that will not be blamed for nothing." And so it was clearly a sign of anti-Semitism, yeah. obviously.
Yeah.
And the police went back and forth about erasing the message or not, keeping it around for evidence or whatever. But the captain was like, no, get that off of there because we don't need people walking around looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
Police noticed that the message was east of Catherine's murder. So he would have had to felt like confident to go back towards the crime, leaving people to believe that he may have lived in that area, which would make sense if he's always there.
Right.
To do these crimes.
Yeah.
Later that night, a postcard was received at the police station claiming to be the Ripper with similar handwriting. And this note actually did have information about the murders, and the news hadn't been broken yet about the story.
Right.
So interesting.
Yeah. So people think more than likely it probably was the killer just because how did they know the details and everything to send out without the news breaking? Yeah.
Right. And then about 2 weeks later, you know, they were searching the home. They're searching all of East London. And a guy by the name of George Lusk, who was the head of the Mile End Vigilance Committee. And I think I've read something that a lot of people think that was a group, like a vigilante kind of group that was going out just kind of by the name of it. But it was really just kind of a supplement to the police force because they needed extra guys.
Yeah, like the neighborhood watch.
Yeah. He received a letter and received a kidney in the mail, which was believed to be Catherine's missing kidney.
Mm-hmm.
Which is gruesome. However, after some investigation, it was like a sick prank by a medical student, which is lovely.
Disgusting.
Yeah, you really shouldn't be a doctor if you're going to be playing those kinds of tricks,
right? Bud. Yeah. It's like there were human lives lost. We really didn't play jokes.
Right. Yeah. Then November 9th, the body of Mary Kelly was found in her bed by her landlord's assistant. And this was the most gruesome crime. She was disemboweled and virtually skinned, which is
so gross. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the end. That was the last murder
of the five. Yeah.
Of the five.
Yep.
That people point towards Jack the Ripper on.
Mm-hmm.
And some people did actually see him, or they claim to have seen him. And it was believed that he was between 25 and 35 years old, roughly 5'5" or 5'7", stocky, fair complexion, and a mustache, wearing a dark coat and a hat.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the Criminal Investigation Department was Sir Melville McNaughton. He had said that he had an idea of who it could be. Basically, they narrowed it down to people who had knowledge of anatomy and could be a doctor. And he also had three suspects. We'll be getting into those plus some additional ones because, yes, again, there were like 100.
There's so many suspects. And it's interesting to hear, too, how they're all connected to it. So we'll have to give our thoughts at the end, I think. So stay tuned for that. But before we do, we got to first hear a word from our sponsors. Alrighty, and we are back. So let's start with suspect number one, Montague Johnson Druitt. And so he was a barrister who may have had a connection because his uncle or cousin was a doctor, and he had an apparent interest in surgery and like becoming a doctor in that way. And at the time, he lived with his cousin who was practicing medicine close to where the Whitechapel murders had occurred. So that's kind of where this connection comes in. His own family actually suspected that it could have been him because I think he was just not mentally all there. And apparently he was just sexually insane. To me, it sounds like he was a troublemaker.
Mm.
Weirdly enough, his body was found floating in the Thames River only 4 weeks after the last murder, and a suicide note was found. So he was a suspect for a hot minute because of the murders had stopped like after he had died. So they were trying to see like, is that the connection? However, it is a bit of a loose assumption because he had no connection to Whitechapel where all the murders took place. It was like really more of like his cousin. So is it a coincidence? Is it not? That's where the question marks come in.
Yeah, I was also reading that the head of the Criminal Investigation Department, the Sir Melville McNaughton, he had claimed that the family suspected him, but then when other people dug into it, they were like, no, we didn't really think it was him. So yeah. I don't really know. It seems it'll be a little wishy-washy on what the family believed. And I didn't really know what sexually insane meant. So I looked that up and it was you get, you know, pleasure from hurting other people was kind of what they. So maybe he did have those tendencies or something. Like, I don't really know why they labeled him as such.
Right.
But yeah, it seems a little wishy-washy.
Very much so. And then we have Michael Ostrog, and he was a Russian doctor who was in an insane asylum and couldn't provide like a strong alibi. So his background is he was like a petty thief. And so that's how he kind of got his start in getting in trouble and spent most of his adult years behind bars. Kind of interesting just to take a note of being a petty thief and then like a Russian doctor.
But yeah. It's like, huh.
Okay. Yeah. You know, dreams do, you know, happen. You just got to work hard enough for them. And he did have one violent crime, and that was putting a revolver on a police officer. So he had a track record. And eventually he was showing signs of insanity. And even though many people thought he was faking it, he was later transferred into the asylum. And it wasn't until March of 1888, so same year as these murders, where he was discharged. And he was a suspect due to his medical background and mental history. So when everything was happening, he became a suspect because he failed to report to the police after they released his name as someone they wanted to interview. And he was apprehended in April of 1891. So just what, a few years later? And then was sent back to a different asylum. So his story was he was pretty much in and out of mental institution for years. And the last year on record they have for him in 1904 was that he had disappeared. There was really no history of homicidal tendencies or brutality towards women. So people were trying to connect the dots with him. And it actually came out that he was in France at another asylum when the murders occurred. So it really couldn't have been him. So like, his alibi is pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can definitely see where the story is going.
Mm-hmm.
Guy who knows anatomy.
Yeah, I think they were just probably looking at prison release times and like people that had anatomy backgrounds and just kind of trying to work from there.
Yeah, exactly.
I did read something that said that some people argued with the whole knowing anatomy in a doctor way. So like it could also be a butcher kind of way, you know?
Oh, I actually didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to be able to know that kind of technique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good point. So our next suspect, our third one we have, is Aaron Kosminski. And he was a Polish and Jewish man who lived in East London. And he also, too, had actually spent some time at an asylum in 1889 after the last murder. So long story short with his life, he would actually reside in the asylum, and that's where he passed away. But he was known for hating women. Specifically, he really did not like prostitution and prostitutes. So, could he have liked prostitution but didn't like the prostitutes? I don't know. But his appearance did match the public's description. So people were like, could this be him? And there was an author, and his name is Russell Edwards, who wrote a book called Naming the Jack the Ripper, and claims that a shawl was purchased at an auction contains DNA evidence proving that Aaron was the killer. So it gets interesting, but then like kind of sad funny at the end. The shawl was reportedly found after Catherine's murder. And so this is the one where it was like the double murder in the same day. So she's girl number two. And it had some semen on it, where it was reportedly linked to Kosminski's family DNA. So people were like, case closed. Like, I don't know why we haven't talked about it. Where's like the Apple news alert? But the scientist may have made a mistake analyzing the mutation in the DNA, because essentially what happened was it's a code. So think of it as like 101, right? And this is pretty much only found within his family. It's like one out of, I think, 200,000. So the chances are just extremely high. Then somebody redid it essentially. And they're like, no, it's not 101. It's actually like 102. It could have simply been like a typo or something.
Oh, no.
And because of that, it went from, yes, that probably is a strong likelihood, to like literally it was like a 99%. Everybody in the Europeans have this DNA.
Could be anybody in Europe. Great.
Literally could be anybody in Europe. Yep. So they're like, sorry, but no. And another thing people were saying was, okay, let's just say, you know, he did discover this. Why hasn't this scientist like published his findings?
Yeah,
wouldn't you be proud of that? Yeah. So it just made it really suspicious. And basically people were like, I guess probably didn't happen, because or there was a flaw and he did admit to it in that sense by not publishing. He's out.
Yeah.
Next we have one that kind of hurt my soul, and that's Prince Albert. And so Prince Albert was married to Queen Victoria, who's a nickname of the grandmother of Europe and all this fun stuff. And this was kind of coined as like the royal conspiracy. And apparently he was known to frequent the areas of, I guess, East London where the bodies were found. He apparently ended up contracting syphilis, which drove him to his insanity. And people are like, did he get that from hanging out in the East Side?
I mean, most certainly.
Yeah. And people thought, okay, so here's where the story is. And I don't know. I was just thinking about the location of where everything is. It's I don't want to say it's far away, like, it is still in London. Mm-hmm. But where are the Buckingham Palace and where, or Kensington Palace, I think at the time, it's on the west side. It's not necessarily easy to casually go to East London. So
yeah, stay out of the public eye, Alina, to go.
I know.
Do his thing.
I don't know. It is just a little bit of a way when cars haven't been invented yet.
He's got a wagon or carriage, I should say.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of far. Even by tube, it's like, you know, a good 20-minute ride. Like, so anyways, people thought that perhaps he had a child with a woman, like one of these prostitutes. And when Queen Victoria found out about this, she was like, demanded for basically like the woman to be killed, because she didn't want to have a bastard child living amongst her. So that's kind of where the theory goes, but there really is no substantial evidence to prove that this did happen or was the reason. Yeah.
Seems a little far-fetched with them. Okay, we all know royal family can do some shady stuff, but I don't think they need to gruesomely kill women.
Exactly.
Unless they hired a very, very unhinged killer.
Yeah.
And he just went about his own way.
Very unlikely. Totally. Next, we have Walter Sickert. And this is also stems from a crime novelist, Patricia Carnwell, who spent $2 million, apparently, or £2 million on his stuff. Allegedly, he was made infertile from painful childhood surgeries for a fistula of the penis. So this had scarred him emotionally and had left him with like some pathological hatred of women. And so that Patricia was like, could this be a connection? And she went literally Nicolas Cage on his stuff because she was cutting up his paintings. She was thinking she was going to find some sort of evidence, some sort of clue, whatever, on all of his stuff. And the reason why she really honed in on him was because he was obsessed with Jack the Ripper. And one of the paintings had a tile called Jack the Ripper's Bedroom. He had made something, some sort of painting. And she claims that like one of the paintings looks exactly like what the murder scenes would have been. So he would only know if he had been the murderer. And even though she spent so much money on this, and even though this guy was obsessed with Jack the Ripper, his alibi is extremely strong because he was apparently in France at the time of the crime. So I think this was just some guy who had a crazy fascination, and Patricia clearly wanted something and wanted a story.
Yeah, a novelist.
Next, we have Joseph Barnett. And I gotta say, he's like a top tier one for me. So he lived with Mary Kelly, and this is the one who passed away last. She was like number five. And he may have lived in 10 different locations in East London. So he was really capable of knowing the streets and being able to kind of escape the police if they were out looking for someone. And apparently Joseph loved Mary Kelly, and he really didn't like that Mary was a prostitute. So some people think that in a weird, sick and twisted way, he might have committed the murders to keep her off the streets. So essentially to try to scare her and be like, hey, don't do it. I'll take care of you. Please don't do it. And it perhaps could have worked for a good chunk of time, but then he lost his job. And so people think, oh, maybe that's when she went back to the streets to kind of like bring in some money. They eventually got into a fight. We can only assume what it was about, but perhaps it was about her like trying to go back, make some money, and left the apartment. He had left Mary in the apartment for 10 days. And the only reason why someone came in was because the landlord was like, hey, I need your money. Where's the rent money? And details suggest that she was killed in her sleep, and that she would have known who came into her house because there really wasn't anything out of the ordinary. Like, her clothes were folded away. Nothing was messy. It didn't look like there was some sort of burglary. It looked very picture perfect. And so another thing about him was that he knew some of the prostitutes. So that may have allowed him to get close enough to these girls when they're walking home for like a sneak attack. And apparently, his name's Joseph. People called him Jack. So I kind of like this because there seems to be a motive here, like a stronger motive. And another thing too is all the evidence out there is kind of far reaching, but this guy we know lived with Mary Kelly, like knew her. So there's just more of a connection there.
Yeah.
Compared to everybody else.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So who knows? Last but not least, one theory that we do have is that Jack the Ripper could have actually been a female. This is an interesting one.
AKA Jill the Ripper.
Yes.
Dun, dun, yes, yes, dun. Yes.
So we have Aberline, who's an investigator, and they thought that while the police were on the hunt for a man, which totally kind of makes sense, when they should have been searching for a woman. And that's maybe possibly how they were able to get around without suspicion, especially on the night of like the double murders. Mm-hmm. And people were saying perhaps instead of a doctor or a butcher, as you mentioned earlier, could it have been a midwife who had this anatomical knowledge? So when they were going into the, you know, stomach, womb, whatever. So people have noted, they're like, well, maybe this could have been true because if it was a midwife, they might have had bloody clothing and it wouldn't have been out of the ordinary if you knew Jill was, you know, a midwife. Oh, totally. Maybe it could have been a birth.
Yeah. Walking around the streets with bloody clothes. And you're like, oh, yeah, no, she's just a midwife.
Yeah, exactly. And people think that the suspect most likely who could have been was a woman named Mary Percy, who was convicted and hanged in 1890 for the murder of her lover's wife and child and had used a similar method to the Rippers. But all eyewitnesses say that they saw a man. Mm-hmm. So could it have just been a random man? Like, were we all in the mindset of a man? Yeah. So we just like threw out, you know, a description of a guy? I don't know. So many good ones.
I saw a picture, a photo of Mary Percy, and she's a scary looking woman, I have to tell you. Like, the eyes kind of like freaked me out. I was like,
You know, I'm an eye person, so if the eyes tell it all.
Yeah, they really did.
Some people also think, too, I think when I was on the tour, that Jack the Ripper might have just moved to America, and that's kind of why the murder stopped, and we really can't find him after that. So I don't know, could be that, but where's your tinfoil hat, Shannon? Like, where do you lean towards?
If it's on anybody, it's on Joseph Barnett, like you were saying, because that seems, if he knew the prostitutes, they would be more, you know, comfortable around him. But I also kind of feel like it's none of these people.
He slipped
through our fingers, you know?
Yes. Same. I kind of feel the same way. And honestly, the whole like moving to America thing, I wouldn't be surprised if that was also true.
That's one way of getting away with it. That's for sure.
Exactly. And at that time, everybody was moving to America. Yeah. So I don't know.
It's pretty incredible what you can get away with when like DNA isn't really a thing yet. You just get on a boat and pretend nothing happened.
Exactly. No one has to know.
Right.
So interesting. This story is just so, so good. I hope everyone listening enjoyed it. And let us know in the comments, you know, what do you think? Let us know on Instagram at Bare Roots Pod, B-A-R-E. Also follow us on whatever podcast you are listening to. And we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.